This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I think it's number one, it's a great opportunity. I look at the staff that's in place and an opportunity to come in and work with Paul Maurice. I look at his resume, his pedigree, along with Jamie Compan, Charlie Huddy, and Wade Flaherty. This is a great opportunity. And I think that I'm no different than any other coaches when you get an opportunity to come in and be a part of a staff where you can continue to learn.
From earlier this week, that's new Winnipeg Jets assistant coach Dave Lowry speaking to the media about why this move from the Brandon Wheat Kings to the Winnipeg Jets is a good one for him and his career. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk. I am your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We want to hear what's on your mind. You can also do so via text message if that's what you prefer. Send your text to 129090. Gentlemen, good morning to you on this bright and sunny Saturday, the
good morning.
28th of November. How are you guys doing?
Can you turn the heat up in here, Dave? Like, it's a little chilly. Like, I don't want to have to, you know, put my winter jacket on. I'm doing well, but it's kind of like a bit of an ice shack in here.
You strike me as the guy who kind of runs hot more often than cold, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it must be really cold in here if you're saying that you're cold.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, I'm a Schwitzer from way back.
I was going to say, this is a man who looks like he sweats while he eats. So, I mean, I would imagine he also sweats while he sits.
I also sweat before I eat.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. It's nothing to do with the spicy Kung Pao chicken.
Yeah, no, we're doing well. You know, some news coming out earlier this week. We played the clip. Dave Lowry hired by the Jets. There wasn't much else news. So it's a good thing for us that there was that little bit of information that came out earlier this week. But, you know, a pretty expected signing in the sense that, you know, we learned earlier this week that the Jets actually, you know, had reached out to Dave Lowry earlier. And, you know, he decided that at that time his son Adam was obviously, you know, younger and still trying to establish himself. So I thought that was interesting. That came out Ben Kuzma's column in the Vancouver Province that, you know, Dave Lowry had been offered a Jets job as an assistant coach before. So, you know, a great hire. I mean, we know his resume, guys. We remember him, you know, back in 2004. You know, Dave and I drove to Calgary back then, and, you know, Dave Lowry was a big part of that Flames team that went to the Stanley Cup final against the Lightning. So not only did he have a great, you know, NHL playing career, I mean, he's been, you know, a very well-respected coach for some time now. And it's no secret that I think, you know, Dave Lowry is probably a guy that wants to be a head coach one day.
There's no question. I mean, he replaces Todd Woodcroft, Dave.
Yep.
And, you know, to Ezzy's point, he does have a great hockey resume, both as a player. We remember the impact that he had, you know, on the game. And then he made the, you know, a pretty seamless transition to the coaching realm. It's got to be a little bit awkward to come in here and be the assistant coach when your son is such a relied upon member of the team. You know, certainly from Paul Maurice's perspective, I mean, we know how often Paul Maurice leans on Adam Lowry and throws him over the boards in some of those crucial defensive zone matchups. And Lowry, Adam in this instance, is only a year away from unrestricted free agency. So while I'm sure it's nice that he gets to be closer to his son and, you know, rooting for the same team as his son on a night in, night out basis, has to be some degree of awkwardness there.
Yeah, I mean, I would suspect that there's probably a little bit of that, but you know, it's one of the, I think it was the second question that came up in the media availability with Dave Lowry, and he was asked about the idea of coaching his son and how that went about, and you know, the conversation the two of them had in order to ensure that it was okay. And he said, look, if we didn't have Adam's blessing, we weren't gonna, you know, really look into this opportunity. And when it had come up, you know, the prior, I think the 2015 draft, I think it was, a 14 draft, Adam was just kind of a starting NHL player. It must have been 2015. So he's really just kind of starting his NHL career. So at the time, Dave Lowry didn't feel like it was a good opportunity because he wanted his son to be able to kind of make his own way, become an established player before, you know, his dad would kind of was involved, because otherwise then it looks like there's nepotism and all that, and you only
get it because your daddy's boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Dave Lowry said that was the kind of when they had originally had the conversation with Paul Maurice years ago, that was kind of the idea, was that he didn't think it was the right time. And now the opportunity presented itself again here in Winnipeg. And he said, we spoke to Adam and the fit was right and it worked for him. And he says we can keep the two things separate. Our family relationship is our family relationship and our professional relationship will be our professional relationship.
I just want to know if Adam's going to be able to call his dad Jungle Dave still. Probably not, right? Because he's an assistant coach, but that's his nickname.
But do you ever call your dad by his nickname?
Professor?
I don't think my dad has a nickname.
The professor.
That was his profession.
But if his friends, I mean, I think in any walk of life, if your dad's friends ever had a nickname for him, I think you'd still call him dad, right? Or you wouldn't call him by his nickname.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I think, like, when Adam Lowry has been on the station, he's referred to his dad as Jungle Dave, right? Like, that's well known, right? It was just a joke. I think, you know, he's probably...
That was humor?
Exactly. Okay. You know,
well,
but,
I mean, it's off to a raucous start.
Hey, I don't bring my A material this early, Drew. I like to, you know, get a couple bad ones in, and then later in the show, I like to bring the really good ones.
Well, I mean, at that point in time, the really good ones, you know, even if they're just average, they're better than the bad ones.
The really good ones are actually terrible. Yeah. But no, back to what you were talking about before, Drew, like, I don't think there is going to be that awkwardness, and I'll tell you why, because... We know that Adam Lowry grew up in an NHL dressing room, right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, he didn't literally grow up in a dressing room, but he grew up around his dad.
He didn't have a cot in the Flames dressing room?
No, he didn't have a cot at the Saddle Dome.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a guy who has been exposed to things that, let's be honest, the average person, you know, the average kid growing up playing hockey has not been exposed to.
Right.
Right? So I think he knows he's a professional and his dad is a professional. And it's not like this is his dad's, like we talked about it, right? Like he's been an assistant with LA. He's been an assistant with Calgary. He was a head coach with Victoria in the Dub, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's been a head coach for a while now. And, you know, Dave mentioned, you know, we both mentioned it. You know, there was an opportunity for Dave Lowry to be an assistant coach, but because of where his son was. Right. So I think that shows, you know, a lot of compassion and consideration on Dave Lowry's part, you know, to wait till his son is a little bit older instead of, you know, coaching his son in his second or third year in the league or fourth year, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, Adam Lowry has been in the league, what, for 6 years now, 7 years, something like that. So
I think 6 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think there is going to be any awkwardness because at this point, you know, Adam's mature and, you know, he knows that his dad, this is a great opportunity for Dave Lowry, right? Like he did a great job with the Wheat Kings last year, but for him to get an opportunity with the Jets, a team that obviously, you know, has an opportunity to go far in the playoffs. Obviously, you know, depending on, you know, what kind of moves they make, because we know that, you know, there's probably a few holes still left on the roster, but it's just a great opportunity. So I don't think that, you know, there's going to be any awkwardness just because of the fact that, you know, they have been around for so long, mm-hmm. both of them in their respective, you know, at this point, it's hard to believe. Adam Lowry's a veteran, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's a veteran on the team. It still, you know, seems like he's a, well, compared to us, he's young, but, you know, he's still...
Everybody's young compared to us.
Well, relatively young. Well, speak for yourself, Drew. We're not in our 80s yet, so...
You know, what's interesting to me about this is that, you know, he was obviously asked in the Zoom call, you know, what his responsibilities will be.
Yeah.
And he didn't address that. He played coy on that.
That was a bit odd.
Yeah.
That was unusual.
You know, and I understand, you know, maybe not wanting to overstep, but I can't imagine that, you know, I would assume that he has sort of at least, you know, vague parameters about what his responsibilities are going to be at this point.
Well, no, we know. I mean, he's going to work with the special teams, especially penalty killing.
But he didn't say that I mean, you would assume so based on, you know, a lot of his history.
Well,
and I mean,
also just look at the role he's filling from Todd Woodcroft.
I get
that. Right? So, like, I mean, he'll work with I would imagine he'll work a lot with the forwards. He'll probably touch on the power play. I mean, obviously, Paul Maurice, Jamie Compon, they work on the power play. Charlie Huddy on the benches with the defenseman and, you know, works with the defenseman. But, you know, there's definitely going to be some of that considering, you know, that's what he's worked on with other teams, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean,
it is still odd, though, that he was so... I mean, Dave, you were on the call. I mean, you know, it's a little odd that he was so circumspect about what his duties are. It's like Maurice... I mean, it's hard to believe that Maurice said to him, you know, don't say what your responsibilities are going to be. It was just a little awkward.
Wasn't a gag order.
I'd be sure. Why would there need to be a gag order?
I think the only thing that would explain it, because from the entire press conference, that was the only part I really kind of thought was a little bit unusual, because I was like, why would it be a state secret that you couldn't share? Now, the only thing I can think of is that perhaps his duties will be bleeding into somebody else's, and they haven't had that conversation with the other assistant coaches. That's the only thing that would kind of justify that sort of response, is that perhaps, you know, with the hiring, because we know it was relatively... you know, recent, right? Like, we know that, you know, because he had been asked that, he kind of avoided it originally, and then he had said, actually, I was preparing for training camp with the Wheat Kings two weeks prior, and he got the phone call. So the point is that perhaps the Jets, head coach Paul Maurice, hasn't had that conversation about the expanded role. I mean, this is conjecture by me.
You got to think that though, Dave, that they've had preliminary.
Well, I would imagine Dave Lowry has with Paul Maurice.
Right.
I'm just wondering if Paul Maurice hasn't necessarily had those conversations with Charlie Huddy and
the domino effect.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could think of that would justify that sort of.
The timing is a little bit odd. In that, it's been, the Jets season ended when? Back in, the months of bleeding together. Yeah, and you knew that Woodcroft was gone already before that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'd gone to Vermont and Pascal Vincent, came up and worked with the team in Calgary, in Edmonton in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
That, it did take this long and so close to the start of the WHL season that all of a sudden, the rug sort of gets pulled out from underneath the Brandon Wheat Kings. Now they make a relatively seamless transition in appointing Don McGilvery as their new head coach.
Yeah.
McGilvery, who spent so many years with the Winnipeg Blues of the MJHL. But it is a little bit odd, the timing, that it's, here at the end of November, and that you would think they'd be in full swing to get the Wheat Kings up to speed, that, Lowry takes this job now as opposed to, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, whenever it might have been, where there's a lot more of a runway and a lot more transition to get to this point.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, though, the WHL season isn't supposed to start until February, right?
So, fair.
But no, well, it, but
if you're the Wheat Kings, you've been preparing, you've been assuming this whole time that Dave Lowry's going to be right.
We had Mitch Love on, what was that, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And, these guys are still preparing. Whether the season starts, December 1st or February 1st, these guys are preparing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're sitting around and they're saying, I can watch, Netflix and play Fortnite for the next couple of months, right? That's what you do, Drew, but these guys
maybe the Netflix part, not so much Fortnite.
No, so obviously Adam Lowry was preparing for the upcoming season, even though, it's a couple of months away, we hope. We don't know. COVID changes everything these days, but you're right, Drew. Maybe you thought the Jets would announce their assistant coach back in early October or, early November, but we don't know. There's always the chance that, there was somebody else that the Jets were, thinking about. There's some obvious ones there, right? Like Pascal, I think would be.
Mike McIntyre spoke to Pascal this week and Pascal said, look, at this point in my career, I'm not interested in being an NHL assistant anymore.
And so Pascal is the obvious one because obviously, he was brought into the bubble to be a Jets assistant coach with, as you mentioned, Todd Woodcroft took the job in Vermont, right? So, the timing maybe it's a little bit later, Drew, than maybe we thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that, but I don't think that there's anything to that at all. The reality is you look at the Jets coaching staff right now, guys, you've got a lot of experience there and a lot of good coaches,
mm-hmm.
right? Between Jamie Compon, Charlie Huddy, Adam Lowry,
Dave Lowry,
Paul Maurice, not only do you have a lot of games coach, you've got Stanley Cups there, you've got a lot of experience both in the NHL, the AHL, and the WHL. So that coaching staff right now, to me, it's almost second to none.
Well, it'll be interesting. I have my questions with Paul Maurice as a head coach, but that's for another day and another time.
But Dave Lowry's pedigree has been good. I don't think he has a losing record in the WHL as a coach, and he's been a good assistant coach in the NHL. So
Victoria wasn't exactly, a powerhouse in the dub, right?
And he was with Calgary too, right? So, he's had a good...
Look, I don't have a problem with the signing at all. It's just a matter of, I think it'll be interesting. Look, we want to see it on the ice. Everybody wants to see it on the ice because that means there's going to be hockey being played.
Well,
and right now that's a giant question mark hanging over everything because, if I'm not mistaken, all week the NHL and NHLPA, didn't really have any meetings, certainly none that were public. So
Gary Bettman's phone's been on silent.
Well, the ask from the NHL to reopen the CBA seems to have almost derailed any progress that was being made with regard to returning to play, and it's the end of November, guys. you'd like to see something coming up anytime now.
Well,
but we'll talk about that later on in the show.
Yeah, no, I agree. At this point, we don't know if the season's going to start in January or February. So
if there's even going to be a season right now. I know that I always maybe take the glass half empty approach.
Negative, Nelly, for sure.
Fair enough. I've been called worse. But right now with, the chaos that's everywhere in terms of COVID, we saw all the teams, the Golden Knights and the Blue Jackets had an outbreak. Never mind that fact. The fact that the NHL and NHLPA aren't speaking don't appear to be speaking, at least, is what gives me the grave cause for concern. I know somebody will say, well, it only takes one phone call to open everything up. And admittedly so, that's true. But, you know, maybe it's time for somebody to make that phone call. That's all I'm saying.
Guys, on Tuesday, it's December 1st, and the NHL and the NHLPA have not been formally meeting. Like, that's not a good sign if you want to start the season in early January.
Certainly not. I mean, I think at this point in time, we're almost looking towards end of January, beginning of February, as the days trickle away. Yep. When we come back, Connor Hellebuck, Vezina Trophy winner, is he the number one goaltender in the eyes of the NHL Network? We'll tell you the answer on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Jaden Schwartz splits the D, walk right in, let a backhander go, and stopped by Hellebuck.
Strome moving in, shooting, Scott, rebound. Two left pad saves made by Connor Hellebuck. In the slot for Dunn, moving in, shooting! And it's gloved down by Hellebuck. Front for Sandra, a slap shot, kicked away by Hellebuck. Greatest save of the night for Connor Hellebuck. Schuba moving in, shooting! Right into the glove of Hellebuck, who says, not on my watch right now, son.
I know how much producer Sean Asor loves to put together montages, so that was a montage of Connor Hellebuck making great save after great save as he backstopped the Winnipeg Jets into a play-in series berth. I guess it's not technically a playoff berth, but whatever you want to call it, on the way to eventually winning the Vezina Trophy as the NHL's best goaltender for the past season.
The Vezina.
What's wrong with you?
That's Vezina Trophy in French.
I know what it is.
Drew, I have to apply my grade 12 Kelvin High School French immersion somehow, right?
Well, you don't apply much else, so why would you apply? Why start now? You know, logic, reason, things of that nature, 38 years you haven't applied those, so where are you stopping?
The host, Drew.
Okay, you know what? Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Really, really true. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the good folks at NHL Network continued with their series where they're counting down some of the top players in the league. A couple weeks ago, it was the wingers, the top 20 wingers in the league, and the Jets placed 3 on that list. Connor, Wheeler, Laine. Nikolaj Ehlers was noticeable by his absence in that list. Mm-hmm. Last week it was Mark Scheifele, where if I recall correctly, he was the 12th best centerman in the NHL. Connor Hellebuck coming off of a Vezina Trophy winning season, according to the good folks at NHL Network. Not number one, not the best goaltender in the league. Not number two, not the second best goaltender in the league, but number 3. Connor Hellebuck, the third best goaltender in the league, behind Vasilevsky, number 1, and Tuukka Rask, number 2.
Are you going to let me tee off on this list?
Hey, that's less for me to do. So
okay.
Because
a couple of weeks ago, you know, I personally was shocked that Nikolaj Ehlers wasn't in the top 20, and I was even more shocked that Taylor Hall was not in the top 20.
Yes, when you were talking about the wingers,
right,
correct.
Because I think Taylor Hall's a top 10 winger. That might just be me, but he did win something called the Hart Trophy 3 years ago. But let's stick to the goaltenders here, boys. If you're asking me, yes, I think Connor Hellebuck is the best goaltender in the NHL. So if this was Ginsburg's list instead of the NHL Network list, I would have Connor Hellebuck. Am I biased because I live in Winnipeg and I've been watching Hellebuck his entire NHL career? Probably, but I think I'm taking that bias out. And what he did last year, I think, and not just last year, guys, 3 years ago when the Jets went to the Western Conference Final, let's not forget he was a Vezina finalist. So it's not like, you know, this past year was his first great year. I mean, Hellebuck has been a top goalie in the NHL, I would say, four years. So Hellebuck's number one. I would have Tuukka Rask above Andrei Vasilevsky.
Really?
Yeah.
Tuukka
Rask had the second best save percentage in the NHL last
year. Here's my problem.
Second best in the league.
So if you're asking me my list, I would have Vasilevsky at number one, and I would flip-flop Tuukka Rask and Connor Hellebuck. And the reason being is that Tuukka Rask, and this isn't a criticism per se, is that he just doesn't play enough games anymore.
Well, he platoons.
He platoons. He's in a platoon with Halak. And is he better than...
I don't think that's a knock on him, though. I think that's the reality of the NHL, where you only have a handful of teams like the Jets, like the Lightning, right?
Yeah.
But fair enough, Drew. I mean, if you think games played is a factor, then that's fair.
I mean, I think that Tuukka Rask is an exceptional goaltender. I don't really have a significant quibble with anybody who has him at two or at one versus at three, as I would have him.
I think it factors in.
I think it factors into me. It's the names after Rask and Hellebuck and Vasilevsky on this list that I find to be utterly bizarre. I mean, talk about recency bias. You have Anton Khudobin in your top 10. He's not in my top 10. No, you have Ben Bishop as number four.
Well, that's where I agree. The top three, I think most hockey observers would have Hellebuck, Rask, and Vasilevsky in some. They're interchangeable, right? Yeah. Those are your Vezina finalists. Those are your three goalies. Even though, you know, like, I think Dave would probably have Hellebuck higher, either number one or two. But,
well, you know, he's right here. We can just ask him.
Well, but I just wanted. There's two guys, though, before Dave M gets in here, there's two guys that to me have to be in the top 10 that are not. And that's why when I looked at this list, I was shocked. Carter Hart, even though he's only 21 years old, has to be a top 10 goalie. I think you can make an argument that he's a top 5 goalie, first off. John Gibson is not in the top 10. I realize that, you know, John Gibson's numbers this past year weren't good, but he happened to be on an awful Anaheim Ducks team.
Yeah.
You look at John Gibson's numbers, and Dave knows, going back to the American Hockey League, I mean, John Gibson has been like a career 920, 925 save percentage goalie. And a couple of years, you remember, Gibson was in the Vezina conversation. So for me, I'm not saying that John Gibson's a top five goalie, but I would say, you know, he's probably, I don't know, sixth, seventh, eighth, somewhere in there. Like, Ben Bishop to me is a great goalie, but he's not anywhere close to being the fourth best goalie.
You can't be the fourth best goaltender when you're injured, you know, half the time.
Well,
and that's the knock on Ben Bishop is his injury problems, Dave. You know, do you think Hellebuck, I mean, I know that they always say, well, we never read these rankings, we never, you know, pay any attention to these rankings. Connor Hellebuck, a guy who is always looking for something to motivate him and to almost, not, I don't want to say that he's got a chip on his shoulder because that's probably too extreme, but he's always looking for ways to maximize the mental side of the game. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's looking at that and saying, well, I won the Vezina. To Ezzie's point, I was a finalist a couple years ago. Why am I number three on this list?
I would hope not.
Fair?
I would hope not.
Hellebuck doesn't care.
No, I mean, I would hope not simply because this is like, again, this is David Satriano's opinion, and he's entitled to his opinion, just like the three of us are. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but I suspect that he's not going to be over. Connor Hellebuck isn't going to be overly insulted.
I think he takes a look at David Satriano's list, and then he looks over on his mantle, and he sees the Vezina trophy, and he's like, oh, yeah, I have the Vezina trophy.
Still Patrick
Waugh. I think I'm good.
Still Patrick Waugh. My Stanley Cup rings were blocking my ears. But the one thing I would say about Connor Hellebuck on this list is just the team he played on. Right? Look at what he was able to do on the team that he played on versus Vasilevsky and versus Rask. Because nobody is going to suggest that the Jets were in the same category as the Bruins or the Lightning.
The Bruins were exceptional compared to the Jets.
So, you know, and look, the reality is this, to Ezzie's point, Ezzie makes that point for me though, John Gibson is a phenomenal goaltender who is on a terrible team.
Yep.
So people overlook him because of what he's, you know, because of who he's surrounded by. You put John Gibson on the Bruins or the Lightning, John Gibson's on the list.
Yeah.
And so it's circumstance. Now, so that's why I'm saying, so would this actually rank him in any, or is this more of a, what team is he on and what's he able to do? Now, the one other guy who I'd mentioned, who, if you remember when we interviewed Kevin Woodley, was going on and on about, was Jacob Markstrom.
Yep. Number nine.
I think he's like eight or nine.
He's nine on this list.
Yeah, so, like, to me, he could easily be four or five.
If you listen to what Kevin Woodley said, the numbers, not the publicly available numbers, but the numbers that the goaltending guys really...
It's the high danger shots that he faced. It's the goals saved above expectation.
That's right.
And that's why, guys, you know, Hellebuck was head and shoulders above the rest of the NHL. That's why, like, we talked about this leading up to the awards, right? Like, this was one... Like, not only did Hellebuck win the Vezina trophy, it really wasn't close, right? And Tuukka Rask had a great season. Andre Vasilevsky had a great season. Jacob Markstrom was in there. I think he was fifth in voting, if I'm not mistaken. But, like, we all knew. It wasn't like, you know, oh, it's going to be a close one, and we hope Hellebuck wins it. Dave's right. Like, with all of the turnover on defense, like, I don't have to go over this, do I? We've talked about this so many times on the show. Like, it was his year. Mm-hmm. It was Hellebuck's year.
Yeah.
Period.
He dominated everything, and as a result, the Jets were able to get where they were able to get in the course of the season, because as we've spoken about many times before, if he wasn't as exceptional as he was, the Jets were probably 29th, 30th, 31st in the league in terms of the performance.
That game in San Jose, I realize Paul Maurice likes to reference it all the time, But that game in San Jose was Hasek-esque.
Like the 50-save one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those games where Connor Hellebuck was not going to be beat. I think he let in one goal that game, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or was it a shutout? I forget. But it was one of those games where, like, the Jets had no... Like, it wasn't a game where the Jets were in. They were getting badly outshot. Yeah. And he won
the ice was tilted like that until they scored.
He won the game single-handedly, right?
Yeah, there's no question.
And he did that on various occasions, right? Like, that was just the one that stands out to me earlier in the season. But, again, I mean, I don't really care about these rankings, but I would definitely have Hellebuck higher than three.
Yeah.
And I would have other goalies. Like, Robin Leonard, to me, is a guy that...
He's eighth on this list. Yeah, he should be higher.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I could hear an argument. Like, I'm not a goalie guy. Like, we turn to guys like Kevin Woodley... You know, to provide us with more analysis on goaltenders.
Yeah, Marty Biron, another guy we always rely on.
Like, but I could hear an argument for a guy like Robin Leonard being fifth and Jacob Markstrom being fourth. Like, you watched the Vancouver Canucks play last year, and you know they were a very good team, but there were games where Jacob Markstrom was hands down the best goalie, best player on the ice.
Yeah.
So you know he's in the top 10, and again, I mean these are subjective, and who really cares, right? But to me, I don't know what you guys think, but like Carter Hart, you know, he's actually 22. I was just, you know, on his Hockey DB page, and I think Carter Hart is absolutely a top 10 goalie.
The goaltenders of the future, Carter Hart, who's already arrived in Philadelphia, led them to the playoffs last year. Shesterkin in New York, who we all think is going to be, we saw
what he could do.
He was fantastic. He played here in Winnipeg. We all think he's going to make a seamless transition, to the natural bridge from Lundqvist to Shesterkin from New York, and he's going to be the backbone of that team for the next decade or so. So we know that the next wave of good goaltenders is coming up, and I bet you that the list that was published here, this top 10 list, is going to look way different next year, because I would not be surprised to see a guy like Khudobin off of that list and Ben Bishop to be off of that list. Even Jordan Binnington is too high on that list for me.
Yeah.
But time will tell. Let's hope there's hockey that will eventually show us if this list is accurate or not. When we come back, more Jets talk. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. Our Illegal Curve question of the day. With Dave Lowry now on board as an assistant coach, do you expect the Jets to sign Adam Lowry to a contract extension? And if so, what will the terms of that contract be? We want to hear from you. Send us your text, 129090. You can tweet at us, @IllegalCurve. Do you expect the Jets to sign Adam Lowry to a contract extension? And if so, what will the terms of that contract be?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, he's a good friend of ours. He wakes up bright and early with us on this Saturday morning. Teddy Wyman joins us. Ted, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, and I just wanted to say I think this is the first time I've been on since you guys had your 10-year anniversary, so congratulations to you guys, even if it's a little bit belated.
Well, we appreciate that, Ted. Thank you so much for those nice words. That's very kind of you to remember.
And, Ted, we've been on air nine years later than we actually thought we'd be on air.
Yeah, that's very true.
Sorry, 9 years longer is what I meant to say.
9 years and 51 weeks longer than we ever expected to last. But that's a separate issue for another time and day, of course. Ted obviously brought you on. Not a ton of hockey talk to get to, but we can always find time to chat it up with you. Before we get into the Jets, as we sit here on November 28th, both sides, the NHL and NHLPA, aren't really talking or haven't spoken much this week. What would your confidence level be? What percentage would you put at that you think there's going to be an NHL season next year?
A season? I have a higher percentage of that. I'd probably say 80% on that one. Starting on January 1st, not so much. that just doesn't compute at all with the situation that they're in right now and so many logistics that would need to be figured out after the fact in terms of health regulations. Obviously, the NBA is getting going before Christmas, but they've taken the Raptors down to Tampa because of their one team in Canada. But the seven teams in Canada makes a big difference in terms of what the NHL is planning, even though they are looking at an all-NHL or all-Canadian division, which makes a lot of sense. but yet there's so many different health regulations across this country even. So things are completely up in the air in that sense, and nobody's really talking about it from the NHL and NHLPA side of things. It's more about money right now, it would seem. So, you know, we're all just going to be waiting in the dark to find out what is going to happen. There has to be some kind of season, but boy, is it going to be, you know, it's contentious right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well, Ted. And, you know, Drew mentioned there wasn't a lot of Jets news this week. Earlier this week, it was announced that Dave Lowry was hired as an assistant coach for the Jets. And, you know, we were talking about it a couple of segments ago. You know, Drew was mentioning that, you know, he was a little bit surprised maybe that an assistant coach wasn't named earlier. And we wanted to get your opinion on that. Were you maybe surprised that the Jets didn't announce an assistant coach, you know, back in, you know, early October or mid-October when free agency started? And, you know, what do you think the dynamic is going to be like between Dave Lowry and Adam Lowry? Because obviously, you know, there's, you know, a lot of talk that, you know, there might be some awkwardness, even though I think they're both professionals. And I think that talk is maybe, you know, I would downplay that.
Well, both professionals and both very smart men. Adam Lowry is as bright as they come. Obviously, he's a book smart guy, but he's also, if you've ever had a chance to sit down and talk with him, he's also a very insightful, intelligent man. And I just don't see there being an issue there. I think that Dave Lowry is an experienced coach. I mean, you're talking a lot of experience. 5 years in the NHL as an assistant, many years as a head coach in Victoria, and then in Brandon in the WHL. I mean, this is a guy who comes in here to join a very experienced coaching staff. I mean, who's more experienced than Paul Maurice? Really, not many guys in the history of hockey are more experienced in the number of games that he's been behind the bench. And really, I think that's a very good thing for this Jets organization. I think Todd Woodcroft was doing a great job and was rewarded with a job at the University of Vermont because of it. But you get a really good person coming in here in Dave Lowry. And I think, as for the delay to get to that point, you have to wonder if they weren't just holding out hope that this is how it would all turn out for them. There may have been offers to other people, and maybe that's why it didn't quite go, you know, as quickly as expected. But, you know, they didn't have that rush. I don't think there's a rush about much of anything. And maybe there will be now, like if the NHL and the NHLPA suddenly come up with a deal and say it's time to get started, then there'll be a rush. But there hasn't been much to rush about to this point.
You know, Ted, you guys at the Sun do a really cool thing. You be the boss, taking the temperature of the fans and asking them all sorts of questions. What sort of insight did you gain from this year's You Be the Boss study?
Well, there was one question in there that I asked about all of the coaching staff and the general manager, and it was, you know, what would you do with those people, with Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice, and, you know, very few people obviously want them fired right now or given any kind of long-term extension. I think everybody's watching this coming season. But we've already talked about how it's going to be an unusual season, so I'm not sure that's even necessarily fair to use as a barometer, but I think people are watching this coming season and want to see this team return to closer to the level that they were in 2018 than they have been the last two seasons. It's gone in reverse. You know, you go from Western Conference final to out in the first round of the playoffs to essentially not even making the playoffs, just getting in an expanded format. And I don't think people are very happy about that. I don't think that they feel like it's time to blow up the ship, but I do believe that they think things have to come around soon or else maybe changes are going to be made.
To that point, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, to that point, has the Jets done enough, you know, to shore up those holes that they had at the beginning, you know, of the offseason? I mean, we know Paul Stastny theoretically will come in and, you know, shore up that second line center position, but everyone looks at that left side defense and you're still got the unknowns there, you know, in terms of, you know, can Samberg step in? Can Heinola step in? You know, can Forsberg, you know, maybe play a bit of an elevated role or bounce back from a bit of an injury plagued season? You know, from your perspective, have they done enough to maybe reaffirm themselves as a team on the rise as opposed to a team that's either been middling or on a downward swing?
I'm almost certain you guys asked me the same question the last time I was on, which was a couple of months ago. And I mean, that's the...
We just copy and paste the questions, Ted. We just bring back the old ones.
But I think that's the point to my answer is they haven't really done anything since then. And the answer then was no. You know, I don't think so. I don't think that that defense looks measurably better than it did this year. Now, you did mention a couple of swing players, and that is Dylan Sandberg, Ville Heinola. If those guys are coming in here and making a huge difference, then maybe, right? But, you know, if the top six is going to have added in Derek Forbert and then retained Nathan Beaulieu playing on the left side, perhaps with Tucker Pullman or even with Neil Pionk, I just don't see how that becomes a measurably better defense. I think Forbert's a good player. But is he that much better than Dmitry Kulikov? That I'm not sure of, you know, without seeing it up close. But so, no, I don't think so. And then you add Paul Stastny. Yes, that does make a difference in terms of your second line center. But again, like, that's not a massive change to what has been going on here before, I don't think. And it's a pretty short-term solution. So,
well,
go ahead.
If you feel that way, Ted, and you're certainly not alone, and I mean, I think a lot of us in this room would feel that way, and a lot of independent outside observers would feel that way, you know, why... You know, why don't Kevin Cheveldayoff and or Paul Maurice also feel that way? Where are they getting the confidence from that you think that, you know that feels as though they've done enough to you know, rectify the situations?
Well, you go and you look at how Kevin Cheveldayoff has managed things over the years. I'd say almost every offseason we went into it saying this is what needs to be done, at least from a media standpoint and a fan standpoint. And sometimes it has been done and sometimes it hasn't. And there's always reasons for that. And Kevin's not the kind of guy that's going to share them as to why he got something done or why he didn't get something done. There's an awful lot to do with salary cap. There is complications in there with Brian Little's potential long-term injured reserve, with all those situations revolving a salary cap. And also, of course, a fact that here's an organization like everyone else in Canada and the United States at this point that's going to be playing most likely without fans, had to cut their season short, did not finish that, didn't have playoff revenue. Like, there's so much that's gone on, and you just don't know where things stand in terms of the money and everything that's being thrown about in as this season approaches. So, I mean, I just think there's a lot of complicating factors that could lead to reasons why they haven't made certain moves. And also, there's been those rumors about trades. We've heard Patrick Laine's name mentioned. We've heard Jack Rossovic's name mentioned. Sammy Nikiu. What were they looking for in those trades? Well, you would assume that part of it would have been to bring in a pretty high-level defenseman. That hasn't happened yet. We're not saying that isn't going to happen.
But Ted, last question for you here. Dave M. has been doing a great job on IllegalCurve.com updating all of the Jets prospects that are currently playing overseas. And you know, the biggest one, you know, has to be, you know, Christian Vesalainen. And you know, I think you'd agree that he was coming off of a fairly disappointing year with the Manitoba Moose, even though he finished pretty strong. But, you know, he's a point per game right now, playing for the same team that he did when the Jets drafted him in the Finnish league. Are you of the belief that, you know, Vesalainen factors into the Jets' plans next year? Because I think you'd agree, you know, after that play-in series against the Flames, nobody really was talking that much about Christian Vesalainen. It was almost assumed that, you know, Vesalainen was going to play, you know, the entire year with the Moose. But, you know, you look at the numbers he's putting up, and, you know, he's scoring some goals. I believe he's a point per game in the Finnish league. Is he a guy that you can see maybe, you know, creeping in and maybe grabbing a third line role or a fourth line role? I realize training camp might be you know, a ways away, but what are your thoughts on, you know, what Vesalainen has been doing in Finland?
Easy answer there is yes. He obviously does have a chance to creep up and be a part of that. And in all honesty, it's funny when you think about a guy like that, and he just kind of fell off the radar a little bit over the last couple of years because he hasn't exactly lit it up in the minors, you know, and he didn't really show much when he was up with the Jets. So you kind of forget a little bit about the fact that he is still in the pipeline and coming along, but he also, you know, he's also getting to that age where you reach you know, where development takes you to a certain point that the NHL now becomes more of a reality. This is a player that needed to be developed before he could come to the NHL. He's had some time with that, and that includes on ice, it includes your skills, and it includes strength and conditioning, it includes all those things, it includes coaching. And that brings him to a point where right about now is when you're starting to reach that stage of development where maybe you're going to be in the mix. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing from him over in Finland right now looks like a player who is more in tune with his surroundings and ready to take a next step. Great sign for the Winnipeg Jets. If he can come up, if he can be a part of those bottom six forwards, I think that would be a really good addition for the Jets. And the sky, the limit is not there for him either. You know, I mean, I don't see why he couldn't at some point be a top six guy for the Jets. He's got some skills. He's got a good shot. He's got a lot of things working in his favor. He's just got to develop them to the point where they work at the NHL level.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, before we let you go, I got to give you praise. The entire Sun sports team, you as obviously sports editor, Paul Friesen, the Against All Odds series about the Bombers' run to the Grey Cup has been absolutely fantastic. I've enjoyed every section of it. I encourage everyone to pick it up or get a copy of it, subscribe to the Sun so you can read it. It's just a great behind-the-scenes look at the Bombers' run to the Grey Cup last year, and I couldn't help but have chills. I was watching a repeat of the Grey Cup earlier this week and reading the series and watching the game and everything. It brought it all together. So kudos to you. Kudos to Freezer and, of course, Scotty Billick, who you guys have doing a lot of COVID work right now. But kudos to the entire Sun Sports team on that great series.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. I have to give all the credit to Paul. That's his baby. He did a wonderful job. I'm very, very proud of his work.
Take care, Ted. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back, more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Carried out by Connor. 2-on-1, empty net. Connor for Shifley. He scores!
Winnipeg's on their way for the next round.
So back in October, who had Vegas and Winnipeg in the West Final? The Jets will host game one.
From a few years ago, Kenny Albert with the call, the Jets defeating the Predators in game seven, moving on to the Western Conference Final, pardon me, where, of course, they were defeated by the Vegas Golden Knights. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Our good friends at Bernstein's, of course, are still open in this COVID code red situation. All of your grocery needs are available. Check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com. Whatever you can shop safely. They'll bring it right out to your car. They'll even deliver it to you. Check them out. Make sure you get in touch with them. Your deli needs do not have to go away just because we're in COVID code red.
Well, I think based on last week's texter, I might be doing some of those deliveries for,
that's true,
for Bernstein's.
Yeah. So
I'm still not unconvinced that it wasn't you as a texter.
As his alias, trying to get some deli food into his
Dave,
belly.
I don't own a phone.
That's true. Anyways, The Athletic, another interesting project. They love to do these interesting projects where they look ahead. This one, they look ahead to the 2023-24 NHL season. Hopefully we'll have hockey by then, but yeah. 50-50. But they look ahead about 3 years.
I can't even count that high, 23-24.
Yeah, I know. It's a few years from now. Who knows how many more kids they'll have by then. But and they rank every team in the NHL based on four categories. The young core of players and prospects, mm-hmm. management and coaching, ownership and market, and the salary cap situation. So the salary cap situation, what they have, what a team has on the books for a few years down the road from now. And, you know, of the teams, the Winnipeg Jets come in at 12th overall in their look ahead to the 2023-24 season. And, you know, I found it to be a little bit interesting because they talk about how the biggest question mark for the Jets and maybe what maybe keeping them from being even higher up on that list is the uncertainty surrounding Patrick Laine. And we know that that's been an issue all offseason and something that we're all concerned about and fans in Winnipeg have been focused on for a number of months now. Mm-hmm. But that is the big unknown for the Winnipeg Jets. And if they resolve that, I think basically what they're saying in this Athletic article is that the Jets might actually go higher up on the list based on the talent that they have on the roster, the talent that they should hopefully keep on their roster, guys like Scheifele and Connor and Ehlers, who will all be key members, Morrissey, Hellebuck, all these guys who are still going to be key members of the team, and that even 3 years down the road from now, the future for the Winnipeg Jets does look decently bright.
Yeah, and we already knew that, guys, right? And you just named all of the players, right? Like, all of the Jets' core players, with the exception of Blake Wheeler, are all currently in their 20s and arguably in their prime.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you're talking about the big boys like Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Nick Ehlers, like, most of these guys' best offensive years are to come, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not necessarily Scheifele, but I could see Scheifele putting up, you know, 90, 95 points easily.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And especially when you're talking about Laine, Ehlers, and Connor. I mean, those guys are definitely going to have their best offensive years to come, right? So, and then Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello, Dylan Sandberg, Ville Heinola, like, that back end is going to be young in a couple of years. Maybe not so much this year because we don't expect, you know, both Heinola and Sandberg to necessarily play in the top six. But, you know, what surprised me, I think, first off, this article was really well done. I think they had something like 12 different staff involved in this article. Like, Eric DeHatchek was involved. I know Craig Custance took a lead. Haley Salvian, like, Michael Russo. They had, I think it was like around 12 people.
Each category had three different journalists assigned to it. So the core and the prospects was Craig Custance, Corey Pronman, and Scott Wheeler.
Yep.
Management and coaching was Craig Custance, Mike Russo, and Scott Burnside.
Yep.
Ownership and market was Arpan Basu, Haley Salvian, and Eric DeHatchek.
Yep.
And then the salary cap situation was Harmon Dial, Dom Luchishin, and James Myrtle.
And then Dom is the cap specialist there. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised, you know, not, like I said, I mean, the Jets are 12th. Okay, I mean, I would have probably put them maybe a little bit higher. But the salary cap situation, I thought, you know, the grade was, or the score, I should say, 5.5 was maybe a little bit low. And I realized that, you know, maybe Blake Wheeler's contract has quite a bit to do with that.
Yeah, that's the one that they're concerned about, because Wheeler at that point in time will be, what, 37, 38. Right. It'll be the last year of his, you know, $8.5 million or whatever it's going to be, 8.25.
But, you know, the Jets are going to have, like, quite a bit of salary cap space going forward, especially when you consider, you know, a guy like Matthew Perreault's contract's going to come off the books, even though we're not talking about 21, 22.
Yeah.
We're talking about, you know, 23, 24. So you're going to have, you know, potentially a Patrick Laine making $9 million a year. So that salary cap space is going to get eaten up pretty quickly. You know, you're going to have a deal.
But it doesn't matter because you have, you know, you have Ehlers and Scheifele and Hellebuck and Connor under what I would call reasonable deals.
Well, right. And then, you know, I think what they were projecting as well were players like, you know, Jansen Harkins, Mason Appleton, some of those younger players, you know, having a little bit of a, you know, a salary bump. But, you know, when you're talking about guys like that, you're not talking about $4 or $5 million a year players. So, you know, the Jets are set up pretty well. And, you know, I think what the most important, you know, aspect of this is the young core and the prospects. Like, the salary cap thing, I mean, that's what Chevy and Larry Simmons and you know, the Jets management, they deal with that, you know, on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
Is Patrick Laine a big question mark? Sure. But I think even without Patrick Laine in the lineup, and again, you guys know that I am definitely against, you know, moving on from Patrick Laine. If you can hold on to Laine, I think you hold on to him for dear life, because I just don't think you can get a goal scorer like him either, you know, on the trade market or, you know, via free agency. So that's what's most important. Like, even if the Jets, you know, don't go far in the playoffs this upcoming season, that doesn't really change anything, because you've still got a lot of good young prospects in the pipeline. Is it as good as it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, Dave, when you had, you know, guys like Nikolai Ehlers and Josh Morrissey coming in like first-round picks?
Right.
No, it's probably not. But when you consider, you know, we mentioned it earlier, Heinola, Sandberg, you know, Christian Vesalainen. You've been covering the prospect overseas.
Vesalainen to me, and I know we've talked about Vesalainen for the last number of weeks, Dave.
Yep.
Vesalainen to me is almost one of the biggest wild cards right now. If he can I mean, a bit of a broken record, admittedly. If he can translate what he's doing overseas back to North America, it's almost like found money for the Jets because he'd sort of been the forgotten first-round pick because he hadn't immediately stepped in and established himself as a preeminent player. If he can all of a sudden sort of, you know, playing with more confidence, translate that to North America, boy, I mean, there's no reason why at full capacity he's not another top six winger for your team.
Well, I mean, I suggest people go and read Jay Bell's article in the Winnipeg Free Press. He spoke to Christian Vesalainen a couple days ago, and I thought it was a really insightful article. I thought Christian sounded, you know, like he's matured. And I think he understood what is in front of him, what is his responsibilities, how he has to come in and take someone's job. And look, he's in his early 20s. He's 6'4", I think. He's a big boy. Mm-hmm. He's got a great shot. Does he have some flaws to his game? For sure. Is it something that I think... Again, I think if you put him in the right role, right, the right situation, he's going to have success. So, look, we've been talking about it for I don't know how long, but if the Jets go with a scoring top three lines, you know, not top nine, you know, Christian Vesalainen could be a real nice wing addition to this Winnipeg Jets team because he's got the shot, he's got the size. You know, again, you could really see the things he said to Jason in – when he was talking about it, he wasn't talking about it for Liga action. He was talking about for what it would be like in North America. So here's a guy who knows that he has an opportunity to come in. And again, you got to remember, and it's something I think we've been talking about for quite some time. I think he's got a big advantage over guys like Mason Appleton, Jansen Harkins, who aren't playing games.
Yeah.
So Christian Vesalainen is over in Finland right now. He's playing games. He's in game shape. Whenever they have a training camp, I don't care what, I mean, we've talked about it forever. I don't care what kind of training you do off the ice or on the ice in, you know, practice. It never is going to translate to game, you know, to
game speed, game aspect.
So when it comes to the training camp, Christian Vesalainen is going to come in there, and I really think he's going to have an opportunity to be a winger on this Winnipeg Jets team.
When we come back, Brian Engblom's going to join us. He's a Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. They got a big piece of their RFA puzzle taken care of earlier this week in signing Mikhail Sergachev. We'll talk about that, talk about the other moves the Lightning still have to make because their salary cap troubles aren't going away anytime soon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their salary cap conundrum, we are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, Brian Engblom. Brian, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm great, thanks. I'm on Copperhead Golf Course. It's 79 degrees today, and hardly a breath of wind.
That's just mean, Brian. That's just mean to do that. It's unseasonably warm in Winnipeg, but there's certainly not a golf course open.
Yeah, I think, Brian, I think we could probably, you know, golf in Dave M's backyard here in River Heights. I mean, it's a little bit chilly, but...
Yeah, not quite as appealing as where you are, but we appreciate you taking some time away from the links to talk about the Lightning. And Brian, we obviously have to start with the contract for Mikhail Sergachev earlier this week. You know, it's a 3-year deal. It's $4.8 million per season on a salary cap hit. You know, and everyone said when this contract was signed, like, how do the Lightning keep doing it? How does Julien Brisebois keep, you know, the tradition of Steve Yzerman alive in finding these, in getting these players to sign these, what I'll call, below market value contracts? Is it just a testament to the culture that they have built in Tampa with owner Jeff Vinnick and with the front office and John Cooper behind the bench that guys are willing to take a little bit less money to remain a key component of the Lightning organization?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything for sure. First of all, it's a great place to live. There's no knocking that. when if you've seen Alex Killorn's stuff, you know, cruising around on his, you know, I know that went a long way around the NHL. Guys are going, damn, the middle of winter, look what they can do there. You know, he lives right on the water, like a lot of them do. Jeff Vinnick is, I think, the best owner in sports. So that is a terrific part of it. And Steve Yzerman did set the table there as far as, you know, contracts and trying to keep guys in line and saying, you know, this is what we can pay you to try and have a good team. And, you know, it's nothing new. It's not a new approach by any means, but Julien Brisebois has been able to continue that along. And because they do have a good team and they understand that, and they have a team that, you know, really gets along with each other. They like each other, and God knows they proved that by winning the Cup the way they did, you know, being in the bubbles. And that took a lot. I think there are some teams that really, you know, bucked against it and really had a tough time being isolated like that. I think the Lightning did it probably better than any other team. So you have all that stuff working for you if you're management and the players want to stay. So as far as Sergachev goes, he's a hell of a player. And I thought he got a real fair deal. I thought it was good. It's a bridge deal, which, again, Kucherov has done that. Vasilevsky's done that. Point's done that. On and on and on. So the precedent's been set. So when you set a good precedent like that, then it's pretty easy to go and say, well, you think you're different? You know, we know you're a good player, but are you going to be, you know, are you different than those guys? You can't do the same kind of thing. So, you know, that travels for at least a while, and it's still traveling along, and it's working in Julian's favor. And he'll nail a big contract next time around. I mean, it's not the greatest time to be a free agent, right? There are a lot of teams up against the cap, obviously, including the Lightning. And it's kind of a tough time to be out there and try and go for the big bucks. Not many guys could do it this year.
So, no, Brian, you just mentioned that, you know, it's not the best time to be a free agent, I guess, unless you're Anthony Cirelli, right? Because now that Mikhail Sergachev has signed his three-year deal, I mean, all the attention, it seems, in the hockey world has switched to Anthony Cirelli, and he's obviously coming off of a career year and was a huge part of the run to the Stanley Cup for the Lightning. And, I mean, we expect Cirelli to sign eventually, and, you know, there is a good chance that it's going to be a bridge deal as well. I think you'd agree with that. The question I had for you is, Tyler Johnson has been placed on waivers. He wasn't claimed. I mean, Tyler Johnson is an easy name to see, you know, on the Lightning roster and think that he's going to move on. But if you look at that salary cap situation, is there the belief in the Lightning organization that they might have to move out another veteran forward in addition to Tyler Johnson?
Yes. Yes. We were just talking about this earlier. Tyler did pass through waivers. You know, it's a tough time. And I know he knows the business, but still, it's probably got to be a little bit of a blow to your ego. It's not that nobody wants him. It's just because everybody is so cash-strapped, and it's definitely a buyer's market. So he has some control over where he goes, you know, because he gave him a list of teams. So, you know, that narrows the field, certainly, for Julien Brisebois. It looks like, from the outside, that he may have to sweeten the pot in order to make a deal there. I wouldn't be surprised he's already got something on the verge. A lot of times deals get made over the course of several weeks, and then all of a sudden it looks like something happened at the last minute, which, you know, it's not really the case. So I'm sure there's something going on there on at least one front. But yes, they do have to move somebody else. Basically, the numbers show that they have to move another probably $5 million, that ballpark, in order to make room for all three of the signings, because Chernak has to be signed as well. So that's kind of the basic school of thought. You've got Yanni Gourde, who's a $5 million guy, but he's got a no trade, so they'd have to ask him. Killorn is in a situation where he's making, I think, 4.45. That would probably do it. He, I think, has some say, but not a lot in where he goes. So it's somebody like that who is, you know, a major player on the team that probably has to go here. And I think that, that attitude and that, you know, recognition by the whole team was, you know, a really good impetus for them to play as hard as they did and win the Cup, because they knew they'd be missing some guys who had been with the team for the last number of years. And, you know, you want to win it for them too. And they did.
Now, Brian, one thing we've been looking at here in Winnipeg is a lot of the Jets prospects who are playing overseas in Finland or in Sweden or in Russia. So it's kind of a two-parter. Number one is, does Tampa have any prospects right now playing overseas? And what kind of advantage is that going to give these guys when they come to a training camp and they have to compete with guys who really have been off for, I mean, with Tampa, obviously, it's been less than a lot of other NHL teams, but have been off for quite some time?
Some of the real young guys, you know, I think some of them are doing that. I haven't really even checked the guys that have, you know, just been drafted this year, et cetera. But, you know, the American League guys haven't played in a while. It's difficult for sure. Young guys' development is so important, and teams all around the league have their young players playing in Europe or back in junior if they can or wherever they can, because, I mean, look at the seven teams that didn't make the bubbles. That'll be 10 months off. That's incredible. So you got to get them playing and developing. So they're trying to do that, and let's hope, you know, we keep our fingers crossed that we get going here sometime in January.
Brian Engblom is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You know, Brian, sticking to sort of you mentioned the need to get Eric Chernak signed, and he's obviously an RFA, and, you know, he's a good player, doesn't get the attention that a lot of the other guys on the Lightning blue line do, but, you know, they get him signed, or they will get him signed, presumably, and that gets him to their sixth defenseman. Is this the year that Cal Foote, 2017 first-round pick, you know, begins to transition from an AHL defenseman to an NHL defenseman? Do the Lightning sort of have him penciled in as that, not necessarily the seventh defenseman per se, but a player coming up through their system and ready to take that next step to be a fixture on the back end?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's up to him. I mean, I think there's a spot open. There's no doubt. You know, Bogosian left for the Leafs. Shattenkirk's gone to Anaheim. So there's certainly room there. And salary cap wise, they need Foote to move up in the process and become a regular guy. That'll help them out an awful lot. From what I heard, the second half of his season was really good, and he took another step forward. You know, working on it, he's got the size, he's got a big shot. Just getting used to the skill level, and, you know, playing a little more quickly and decisively. That's all stuff that just experience. So. And obviously he had, you know, everything stacked against him. We had, you know, eight defensemen here, eight NHL defensemen with the big team this year. There was no room for him. So on other teams, he may very well have been up, you know, in the second half and playing his way into the team and getting more time in the NHL level. But that's, you know, when you play on a team that ends up winning the cup, it pretty much speaks for itself. The depth was a big reason that they won the cup. So, Foote certainly has, the door is open for him. And he has to play his way onto the team, and he'll be given every chance, I'm sure, this year.
So, Brian, earlier this week, you know, we saw that, you know, Yanni Gourde took the Stanley Cup for a five-hour cruise in Tampa Bay, and then later in the week, Andrei Vasilevskiy and his agent Dan Milstein and Alex Volkov were on a yacht, you know, around the Florida coastline. So we were just wondering, you know, what you're going to do with your day with the Stanley Cup.
Well, you know what? The Lightning were really nice to me. I got a couple of hours with it 2 weeks ago. They just kind of fit me in there. It's the first time I've ever had it because they didn't start doing it till the 90s, right? And I was on those 70s teams that won. You didn't get to do that. So I'd never had it before. And because they knew that, they said, how would you like to have it for a couple of hours? And it was great. It was a lot of fun. It was, you know, short notice, like a day and a half beforehand. So, you know, my family's way up in Kelowna, B.C., so pretty impossible for them to get down, especially on short notice. But all things considered, you know, with COVID and everything, get some good friends there and a bunch of our crew from Fox Sports Sun that came over. Even our producer Rob Aller flew in from Detroit when he found out I had it. So it was a lot of fun. It was great of Bill Wickett, who works, you know, in the front office for the Lightning. He called me and he said, "I know you're on it a couple of times and you've never had it. How would you like to have it?" And I went, "Hell yeah, that'd be great." So it was a lot of fun.
We appreciate you sharing that with us because, Brian, talking to you is the closest I'll ever get to a Stanley Cup, so that's awesome.
Brian Engblom covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Brian, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to the golf game. Hit it straight and make sure you make a couple birdie putts for us.
I will try and do that. Take care, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Brian. Thanks so much. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' power play and its diminishing returns over the past three seasons. An interesting article from Travis Yost that we'll talk about next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Plays this back for Pionk. Pionk back for Wheeler. Blake Wheeler, rink by Laine, scores! Patrick Laine's first career goal against the San Jose Sharks. And it's a power play marker as Blake Wheeler finds that seam.
From 364 days ago, November 27th, 2019, Wheeler hitting the seam pass to Laine, Laine depositing it into the back of the San Jose Sharks net.
Like, 2020 just can't end soon enough. Like 2021 is guaranteed to be much better.
Like, oh, well, you just cursed us. No, I mean, let's be honest now, on January 1st, 2021, like, the roof is going to cave in or something, but it's hard to believe
things are going to get better.
It might take to the second half of 2021, but it's hard to believe that it could be anywhere near as bad as 2020 has been. I would agree with that. But I get to spend time with you guys, and that's something. I'm not sure what it is.
It's something, all right.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So an interesting article on TSN.ca earlier this week from our good friend Travis Yost, who frequently joins us on the show, and he talks about the Jets' power play.
Yep.
And he looks at the Jets' power play over the last 3 years. And you remember 3 years ago, the Jets' power play was a top five power play in the NHL. It was a huge asset, a huge weapon for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, Patrick Laine, you know, standing there in the quote-unquote Ovechkin spot, teeing off, and you had Byfuglien still at the point, and you had Wheeler on the sideboards, and everything was clicking, and a power play opportunity for the Jets felt like a goal was almost inevitable. It's been diminishing returns since then over the last number of years. And you know, Travis does some really interesting work here in looking at where Patrick Laine's shots came from on the power play last year.
Mm-hmm.
And to the surprise of no one, a lot of teams are shading over towards Patrick Laine to try and take away the weapon from him, because that makes sense. You would take away the weapon. But what Travis is pointing out is that other players are not then getting extra opportunities and are not sort of picking up the slack that, you know, comes with people focusing their attention on Patrick Laine.
Mm-hmm.
So how do the Jets resolve this problem? How do they get back to being that top five power play? Is it time for a complete rebirth of the Jets power play, taking it back, breaking it down, taking it back to square one and redesigning it? Or is it a simple matter of slight adjustments can improve this current situation?
Yeah, I'll get in here first, and then I'll let Dave get in here. Like, I mean, what was the Jets power play last year? 15th, I think. And there were times where it was in the top 10, or it was creeping into the top 10, Dave, if I'm not mistaken, right? So it's not like the Jets' power play was like bottom 5 or bottom 10 in the league, first of all. So I do think, though, that the Jets are a team, because of the players that they have, I think they're a team that maybe relies on the power play more than other teams, right? And Patrick Laine is obviously, you know, the key focus of Travis Yost's article. And, you know, I think that when you talk about the personnel out there, I've said this many times before. I feel like I've been saying this for a year now. Like, I would like to see a guy like Nikolai Ehlers distributing the puck to Laine. I realize they had Neil Pionk, you know, in that spot, like the point spot, and, you know, he kind of replaced Buff or Jacob Trouba. Like, Trouba and Buff have been in those spots before. They've had other players as well. But, like, to me, Nikolai Ehlers needs to be out there on the first power play unit. Like, I've said that before. Just because he's that skilled. Like, I think he has the ability with his speed, you know, with his creativity. He's a guy. And you know, you mentioned the shot locations. Like, if you haven't read the article, basically, the shot locations have changed somewhat over the last 3 years. And what he's saying is you need to get more into the closer to the slot area. Like, Patrick Laine is not going to, you know, play that Mark Scheifele kind of in the middle slot. That's not what I mean. Patrick Laine, because he's a right shot, he's going to be set up on the left circle, but you'd rather see those shots coming from closer to the middle of the circle right. into the middle, right?
What's happening is that his shots that he's taking from the left circle, Dave, mm-hmm. are getting further and further away exactly. from the net and getting closer to the sideboards,
right. yeah.
which makes sense because yeah. defenses are shading him that way. Yeah. But that should open up, theoretically, sure. it should open up the middle right. for better opportunities right. for Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor exactly. and Blake Wheeler.
Right, and you just mentioned Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler, and mm-hmm. you know for sure, I could hear an argument for maybe Blake Wheeler being on the second power play unit because you distribute the wealth a little bit. But absolutely, you know, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, those guys are going to be on the first power play unit. I yeah. mean, those are two of your best offensive players. So I'm not sure if Blake Wheeler and Neil Pionk are on your second power play unit, and then Nikolaj Ehlers is more on your first power play unit. I'm just very, in favor of having Ehlers have a more prominent role. Now, I would also say that, Patrick Laine has to make, some adjustments. I think sometimes maybe, he's at fault of maybe, not being as close to those high danger scoring areas as you would like. But the fact is, guys, and it's very simple to me. 3 years ago, when the Jets went to the Western Conference Final and had that, 114-point season, Laine had 20 power play goals. He had 8 power play goals last year, and I realized that, the last 10 games of the season were played, but he wasn't going to come anywhere close to 20 power play goals.
Right.
If he gets closer to 20 power play goals, who knows? He might score more than that, in a regular 82-game season. He right. might hit 25. The Jets are going to be a better team. If the Jets, it's simple. Like, I realize that we could break this down and talk about personnel and strategy and all that stuff. If the Jets have a better power play, they're going to be a better team, and they're going to be more like that team from 3 years ago.
I think, Dave, and looking at this chart that Travis yeah. Yost produced, you see that Laine's power play production is diminishing,
mm-hmm.
but what you don't see is that it then gets better for other players in response, which is what you would expect to see in this kind of situation, especially with the firepower the Jets have on right. the power play. It's been fairly consistent all 3 years
yeah.
for Scheifele and Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Laine's is the one that's diminishing as more teams focus on him. Wheeler's, has diminished as well. So it seems like that power play, maybe the answer is Nikolaj Ehlers to Ezzie's point, but it does seem like that power play needs some sort of a hookup to the rejuvenation machine.
Well, and I mean, think about what Nikolaj Ehlers is able to do, how he's able to gain the zone
mm-hmm.
and set up. And I think, to your point, Drew, it makes it less predictable for other teams because of his speed, because of his ability to kind of get in quicker than maybe some of the other players as he brings the puck in and set up. It maybe gives you that time that you're lacking without that same speed element. So to me, I think Nikolaj Ehlers, I think Ezzie makes a very valid point. I think Nikolaj Ehlers, with his shot, with his ability to get open, with his ability to carry the puck into the zone, he might be the answer because, again, quite frankly, we could talk about that second power play unit. How much time does that second power play unit actually got?
The Jets 15, first power play seconds. Unit gets, over a minute.
We're at the games. Yeah. We watch these games. You're watching that time click down.
Yeah.
It's almost always 75 to 85% of the time
yeah.
gets knocked off by the first power play unit.
Yeah.
So the reality is, I just think Nikolaj Ehlers on the power play hasn't really been tested. And I think to see him in that element would really give that Jets a different look because really with the absence of Byfuglien, I mean, let's be realistic. Dustin Byfuglien's shot mm-hmm. from the point really afforded Patrick Laine the opportunity.
Yes.
Because when you knew yep. that you had Dustin Byfuglien with that heavy shot
yep.
to take that howitzer, it allowed Patrick Laine, because defenses had to respect the Byfuglien shot. I'm not saying they don't respect Neil Pionk, because I think Neil Pionk is very smart, but he doesn't have a great shot. He doesn't have the same shot.
He doesn't have Byfuglien's shot.
Well, yeah. he has an okay shot. I mean,
but nobody has Byfuglien's shot.
No, I mean, there's only a handful of guys. You're talking about, Shea Weber, yeah. Chara, and Hedman are in the same category. Right. Byf had one of the best shots in the league. But I think, to the point with Ehlers, Ehlers can obviously roam the blue line, mm-hmm. right? But he's also a guy that can kind of be in that Blake Wheeler position, as a left shot. That's mm-hmm. why, again, I I'm not going to take credit and say that I'm the first person that has kind of, been, campaigning for Nikolaj Ehlers to have more first power play time, because I'm not. There have been other people. But I think that, if you look at one player that I think can make that power play more dynamic, I mean, we've seen Nikolaj Ehlers. He's a wizard on the ice with his zone entries, his skating, his hands. So I think Ehlers is a guy to look out for. But again, it comes back to Laine. I mean, you mentioned weapons earlier. He's the Gatling gun of the Jets power play, right? He has the best shot in the league. So if you get him back to 20 goals per year, I mean, the Jets power play, it's almost guaranteed to be a top five power play.
Would you consider going five forwards for the Jets on the power play next season?
I don't think it's a crazy idea, I honestly don't. I think with the speed that that team would have, I mean, again, you know, we know that these guys like Scheifele, Connor, aren't exactly the most defensive forwards that you have. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge risk, of course. But, you know, we know Wheeler would be responsible defensively. We know Ehlers can be, has the speed to get back and really defend if he needs to. It's not the craziest idea I've ever heard, because the reality is, like, look at those weapons. You know, if you had Blake Wheeler, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, and Kyle Connor, I mean, any one of those guys, because the whole point of the article that Travis is talking about is, if Patrick Laine, if look, when you're shorthanded, you have one less guy. Yeah. If you're shading over to protect Laine, that means you're even more open. So there's really no excuse to not be producing.
It's not Bufflin-esque, but a Nikolai Ehlers point shot, you know, he can fire the puck pretty well.
And again, you know, we had someone chime in from Twitter. He said need Ehlers. Greg Burnett said need Ehlers on PP1 for zone entry. All too often, they lose the draw and can't gain the zone. And look, that's what we've been talking about. What can Nikolai Ehlers do is that he can gain the zone for you and give you possession of the puck and really allow you to set up. And with those weapons that we've just gone through, I mean, that's a power play that I think is going to happen. And you know what the reality is? If you give up a shorthanded goal every once in a while, but you're scoring consistently on the power play, mm-hmm. it's probably something you're willing to do.
I don't think anybody should be worried about the Jets' power play, because if you look at Line A's shooting percentage, I mean, last year it was much lower than it was in previous years, like on the power play I'm talking about specifically, right?
So you think that it'll, in this case, not regress to the mean, but it'll return
absolutely.
To the mean.
I mean, again, in a full season, I don't think anybody would be surprised if Line A, you know, hits 20 goals again. Like, just because, you know, he has that ability
on the power play,
on the power play with that shot and the ability to get open. And that's something that I think he doesn't get enough credit for. I think people just assume it's easy to get open. Like, he creates that space for himself. People have to respect that shot. So I think when you have someone like that, I mean, you always have an ace in the hole. So, you know, the Jets power play is not something I'm worried about. You know, I'm definitely more worried about the defensive side of the game at even strength. Because I think the Jets special teams, especially when they acquired Dylan DeMello, their penalty kill was okay.
Yeah, no, the penalty kill certainly bounced back from the historical awful run that it was on. Now all we need is hockey. And time will tell if that happens. When we come back, the rest of the hockey world seems to be in COVID isolation right now. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the situation with the World Junior team. Talk about what's going on with the Golden Knights and the Blue Jackets spiking some positives. I guess it's the time of the show where we have to talk about COVID. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.